You are listening to Powder Radio. Brought to you by Powder Magazine. Welcome to Sponsored. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and this week we have Sammy Carlson on the program. Sammy has been on the top of the ski game since he was a little kid. At about 12 years old, he saw Eric Pollard taking laps through the terrain park at Mount Hood and realized he didn't want to be a racer anymore, and he followed the path of free skiing. He started competing at an early age. He's won X Games contests, X Games real ski, and based on pure ability, there's not a better skier out there than Sammy Carlson. If you look at his career, he started with a great urban game and amazing in the park. He's taken all those tricks to the backcountry, and he's skiing big mountain lines as well. Sammy really does it all, but he's not in the conversation of the greatest skiers of all time, and there's got to be a reason for that, and we're going to try to find that out when we talk to Sammy Carlson.
Yo, Mike.
How's it going, man?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. You make it back from Mexico?
I did. Made it back. Brought a couple bugs with me, but got back.
Bugs as in sickness?
Yeah, a little bit. I still have a little bit of a sinus thing going on. Not too bad, but more stomach, a little Baja belly going on.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Yes, sir.
And it should most likely happen every trip, I would think.
Yeah, pretty much expected, hanging out there long enough.
So what's your off-season been like?
It's been pretty chill this year, definitely. Lots of surfing this summer early on, and then just lately I've been working on a little edit from all my footage this past season with a buddy who's out here in Oregon for a bit. And a couple premiere trips lately, but overall pretty mellow. Lots of cruising.
Nice. Have you gotten out of the full premier tour thing as you've kind of become more of an elder statesman in the ski industry? I know when you were younger, you were probably on every trip possible and signing autographs everywhere you could go. How's that now for you?
Yeah, definitely not as intensive premier seasons back in the day. Used to hit it hard, but now I try and kind of be selective and go to certain shows. But try and take the time to kind of unwind. It's like right at the beginning of the season, you know, so it's a little hectic to go travel around and do all the premieres and still be ready to go.
Have you had a chance to see the MSP movie yet?
Yeah, I did. I saw the MSP movie, went out to Colorado for their premiere.
And what did you think about that? To me, it was a totally different approach on a ski movie from MSP, and it was different, and I want to know what you thought.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely thought it was different as well, and I was kind of into it though. I saw it in a premiere setting, so it was kind of hard to hear everything.
Yeah,
to follow storyline the whole time. But I like seeing movies with a little more substance these days. Makes you think a little bit outside of just the standard action. It's cool.
True. Yeah, I saw it in the premiere setting as well, so I didn't get to really hear the storyline. I just saw a ton of kids in the movie. And whenever I see kids, I try to run the other way, as once you have one, you realize stay as far away as you can from them and you'll have a little bit more sanity. That's me personally. How did the ski experience start for Sammy Carlson?
Yeah, it all started for me back in Oregon. I started skiing when I was 4 years old with my family, just like weekend warrior style for a while. And as I became a teenager, my parents and a couple other families, we'd all rent a condo and government camp for the winter.
Okay.
And we'd just hang out there most of the winter, sneak out of town on like Thursday night if I was lucky, usually Friday night, just hang out at the mountain all weekend.
Gotcha. And were you in a race program at all, or were you just out there free skiing?
Yeah, mainly just out skiing. I tried to race for a season when I was 12, but it just didn't really go too well. It was a good snow season, so there's lots of powder days that I was supposed to skip for race training, and I kind of, my buddy and I, who I was on the team with, a good friend of mine who we had been skiing several years prior to joining the team together, and we were always kind of just, we'd hit the park or just, you know, follow our older brothers around, and we tried the race team together, and we ended up catching a lot of flack for skipping training days and going up to Upper Bowl at Ski Bowl and just riding pow.
Yeah, I can see that being tough. As you start at 12, you're used to just skiing the whole mountain and doing whatever you want and having fun. And then you come into a race program where they're telling you what to wear, how to ski, and what you need to ski. And I can see that being not really the direction you wanted to take your skiing at that point at 12. Because if you start at 5 or 6, you kind of get trained into this is what racing is and you might appreciate it. But at 12, you are enjoying the fun of the hill, and that can be sucked away when you're racing.
Yeah, exactly. It was a little more serious than we were kind of taking it at that time. we're all about just having fun. And I'd done before that, my older brother and sister were on the high school race team.
Okay.
So I was actually allowed to go up. I'd go and forerun the courses.
Okay.
At those races. And that was always pretty funny. Just get to drop in and, you know, no pressure at all. The high school race program wasn't as serious as like some of the Mighty Might Race League was what I ended up joining when I was 12. But yeah, it was funny to go from just racing the gates like that to being in a full-on race program.
Yeah, I can see that as totally different than your normal ski experience. I read somewhere that you saw Eric Pollard shredding the park and you were racing at that point. You saw that and immediately knew that you wanted to get out of the race program. I don't know if that's entirely true, but I wanted to see if that's your perspective on that.
Yeah, pretty much. I saw that was a weekend actually right after we had gotten in a bunch of trouble, kind of like the last straw from the race coaches.
What do you do?
Well, we missed practice like 2 or 3 days leading up to the race. It was a bigger race. And they had expected us to go train, and they kind of gave us the ultimatum a few days before the race that if we didn't go train the following day, that we wouldn't be allowed to race.
Okay.
And my buddy and I just kind of looked at each other like, fuck it, like who cares? And we just went anyways. The next day, went skiing, shredded more pow, and then we couldn't race the following weekend. And so during the race, instead of just hanging out, doing nothing, we ended up just kind of hiking over the hill, and on the backside was where the park was. And we were just kind of sitting in the trees watching. And yeah, we saw Pollard roll through with a couple buddies, and it was just like a slow motion, the way he made it look. We were blown away. We ended up following him down and kind of shadowing him for a couple laps, watching him do his thing. And it was really impressive. We both just kind of decided, all right, we're done racing. Let's get some twin tips and start shredding the park.
And that's when it all started?
And that's when it all started.
And how long did it take from that day seeing Eric skiing to you getting your first sponsor? I know it doesn't happen in a day, but was it a couple seasons of shredding the park and figuring that out? Or what was the process there?
Yeah, pretty much like at the end of the next season, I got connected with a local photographer / filmer up on Hood. And he was connected with some people at Solomon. And then, yeah, so he ended up getting me connected with some people just on a really grassroots level at Solomon. And then I ended up getting a shop sponsor from a ski chalet, a shop down in Portland.
Okay.
Following season. I don't know, I must have been 13 then.
So you're 13 at that point, and you've got a couple sponsors. It's more grassroots. And do you start competing locally? Is that how it starts to build for you?
Yeah, exactly. I never did really any bigger contests really until I went to the U.S. Open for the first time. So I just started doing like the Wendell's Pro-Am Classics up at Timberline and any local events they had going on up on Mount Hood.
And I know eventually the sponsorship with Solomon turned into something a lot more than just a grassroots thing. And back in those days, Solomon had a stacked team and they were really great, it seemed like, to all their athletes. What was the experience like working with Solomon? And you can take this from not just your first 3 years, but your entire career with Solomon. How did they help Sammy Carlson become Sammy Carlson?
Yeah, Solomon really helped me out a lot. Just pretty much providing me the opportunity to travel. They got me into a couple bigger contests. Then they connected me eventually with Poor Boys Productions, which was kind of the key, I think, to everything taking off for me.
Yeah.
So it's really, I just provided a ton of opportunity for me at a young age to get out and put me in the right places to launch my ski career.
And then in them connecting you with Poor Boys and you traveling with the Poor Boys crew, that had to be a special time, I would think, in your life, because you probably had about 7-8 guys traveling to different spots, and it was more of a team effort in putting together the features, the footage, and everything together. What was it like filming with Poor Boys? And was that an organized show? Was it all over the place? How were those days for you?
Yeah, those days, it was crazy. It all happened really fast. When I first started working with Poor Boys, I was at Gravity Games. We skipped a big kind of chunk too from 13. When I was 13, I started getting free skis from Solomon, but it was more through a buddy that I had met through another buddy who worked at Solomon in the demo factory. And so I did that for a couple of years. And then I ended up meeting up with Matt Sturbins up at Wendell's one summer. And we got pretty tight. I ended up joining the Forefront team for a year. Yeah, I was skiing on Forefront skis for a while. And that was really cool. Sturbins flew me out to Tahoe. That was my first like real trip, sponsor trip. I went out to Tahoe and ski with Sturbins. I met Luke Van Valen, his character.
Yep.
Yeah, so those are all really cool. And then that following summer, I was skiing on Forefront all summer and getting ready to actually sign my first contract where there's going to be a little bit of money involved with Forefront skis. And there was a rail jam in Portland that I ended up doing in the fall, where Solomon had brought Peter Olenek and Simon Dumont down. And we were all skiing on this flat down rail outside of a new REI. It was their store opening. So Solomon had put on an event for them, and a lot of their higher ups were there. And I ended up skiing well in front of their marketing manager. So after that event, he ended up offering me a contract. I was really kind of too good to turn down at the time. It was a hard decision. Back then, even I remember being super conflicted, trying to decide if I should go with Solomon or just kind of keep things going with where they're at with Forefront. But I ended up making the choice to go with Solomon, just had more opportunity there, and definitely a good choice. And like I was saying earlier, from once I signed with them, they just really provide a lot of opportunity. They got me in the US Open, and I had a good result at that contest, and that got me into a couple more contests. And then eventually I found myself at Gravity Games, and I was just kind of warming up on the course, taking some laps, and Johnny DeCesare came up to me and asked me if I wanted to do some follow cams. And so we started taking a couple laps, and after like three or four laps, he's just fully stoked, one of the most stoked human beings I'd ever met at that point. And like, what do you think, man? You want to go to France on Wednesday with us? Like, can you go to France with us? He's looking like, dude, there's no way my mom and dad are going to let me go to France.
Right.
But, and then my parents ended up there. They were down. I got home and Solomon had contacted them already. And they made a plan how I was going to get a passport. I didn't have a passport back then. So we had to go up to Seattle and get an express passport made. And yeah, it was all happened really fast. Next thing you knew, I was on a plane. Instead of going to class, I was going to fly to France to meet up with Peter and Michael Olenek.
That's crazy. And so you say instead of being in class, so at this point, I believe you're in high school. And what is that experience like for you? I know you've just become a pro skier on a contract level where you're traveling the world, but are you in school a lot during the last few years of your high school? And what do people treat you like at high school? Is it Sammy Carlson the skier, or is it just a plain old Sammy?
A bit of both. Definitely from like everything was normal. Like sophomore year is when I got kind of those first contracts that started allowing me to travel. And once I traveled, I was supposed to be gone for like 2 weeks. And then the 2 weeks turned into like a little bit over a month. I ended up going from France. I went straight to the Jon Olsen Super Session, or JOI.
That must have been a mind-blowing experience for your first international travel trip.
It was crazy. I didn't even have a credit card back then. So I actually ended up running out of money. Yeah, I didn't have a credit card. So just going, everything was pretty mind-blowing at the time. So yeah, I had a great trip. Was hitting some jumps in the backcountry with the Solomon crew, and everything was going really well, and I was getting ready to come home. And then Strokes, my Oakley team manager, ended up contacting me and asking if I wanted to go to the JOI, which obviously I was really stoked about, but once again, didn't know if my parents were going to allow it.
Right.
So I called mom and dad, and they ended up granting me permission to stay another couple weeks. So I extended my trip, and I flew over from France, flew over to Stockholm, and met Yoon in the airport, which I definitely remember being a little starstruck meeting Yoon.
Yeah.
And we left the airport and rolled out to Aura in his Subaru. I think he had NOS back in the day. It's pretty insane.
And then that whole event, I mean, from what I've heard of the Yoon events, you're treated like a king. You have a key to the village, per se. And I would think at 16, there's probably a ton of girls and a ton of partying going on. I don't know what you're doing at that point in your life, but tell us, what were you doing?
I definitely got stuck into the party scene a little earlier, I think, than most, just being right there, having so much opportunity. I remember though, when I went back to school after that trip, just having some of the craziest experiences for sure in my life at that point. Going back to school, just getting back there, and all of a sudden, just when I sat down in class, like, whew, like, holy shit, what just happened? You know, and kids would come up to me in math class and be like, whoa, like, you still go here? We thought you switched schools. Yeah, it was pretty insane. Definitely, like you said, we had a key to the city. Everyone was stoked to have us in Sweden.
As your career progresses, you're focused on contests early on in your career. In the contest scene, how serious were you? Was it win or nothing, or was it you were just there to have a good time? I know a lot of people have different takes on how they approach a contest, and I want to know how your mental aspect going into one.
Yeah, early on, I definitely was just more like everything that was happening. I was just so stoked on everything that was happening and having so much fun. I wasn't really thinking as far as like career or trying to... I wasn't really thinking about anything besides just having fun.
You're just a kid, I guess, at that point.
Yeah, I was just a kid. So, like, I got my first invite to X Games. I remember just being so psyched that I was actually there. I didn't care at all what happened. You know, like I didn't have any tricks that I was really hoping, like working towards leading up to the event. I just was there totally mind blown and just stoked to be there type feeling.
Yep.
And then my senior year of high school, I got second in the contest, and still I was more, you know, at that time just having fun, no pressure on myself. But after that year, I kind of, that's when I started taking it a lot more serious and started, you know, really trying to prepare and make sure that I was ready. And but kind of with my whole career after high school, I started taking it a lot more serious. And because my parents wanted me to go to college, they put quite a bit of pressure on me at the end of high school to continue on to go to college, like my brother and sister.
Right.
And, so when I made the decision to go forward a different route, you know, like them, something my parents, you know, that they didn't recommend it. They thought I should go to school. So it was definitely kind of like a leap, and I wasn't 100% confident in it. I was a little nervous about the decision I made. But I just decided, I remember having this just like revelation one night as I was sitting at my place, like just thinking like, all right, if this is what, this is the path I'm going to choose, I'm going to do this right and really focus on what I want to do. This is an amazing opportunity, and I'm going to really focus on it and try and just dedicate every ounce of energy I have in my life pretty much to skiing and try and see how far I can take it.
When you look at a kid like you at that point in life, the best thing that you do is skiing. There's nothing better in your life than just the talent you have on the hill. And you find that out when you ski a lot. You start figuring that out as you get to become pro. I'm sure you're a smart guy. I would believe that you're a better skier than you would be a student in life, and that your career was meant to be a skier. And while your parents, every parent wants their kid to go to college because they think that that's the means to a better future. That's how it was for our parents. But for you, I mean, you're probably able to make six figures right out of high school based on your skiing ability because you're an athlete.
Yeah, I was definitely lucky to find myself in that situation. And my dad would kind of be like, you know, I'd tell him my plans on what I wanted to do with my life. And he would kind of be like, son, like, come back to reality. And eventually I just started thinking like, no, like, that is my reality. Like, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to make it, like, I'm going to make this my reality. And
yeah, I could see it tough for a parent to see their child get swept up in skiing and their child say, skiing is going to be my entire life. And when the parent doesn't realize that you are the half of 1% of skiers that have an ability and a work ethic that not many people have. And if you believe in yourself, which you did, and you made those choices probably against the wishes of your parents, and I think you proved everyone wrong. And I would think at this point in life, what do your parents think about your decisions?
They've been super supportive of me along the way, for sure. And I know they're glad and happy the decision I made. But my dad still, he still wants me. He's like, to go to school.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. You can do it whenever you want, but there's no pressure on doing it right out of high school when you're in the prime of your athletic career and you need to maximize the years that you have. Obviously, you made the right decision there. Speaking of decisions, so contests are very important to you at that point in life, and you're getting a lot more serious about them. The Olympics are coming up, and it's kind of at the point in your career where it looks like you might be switching sponsors or looking at a new sponsor, because I know you did leave Salomon at one point. How did the transition from leaving Salomon go, and how was the transition from leaving competing? How did that happen, and how did sponsors react to that?
Those moves were connected at the end. That was in 2011, right after the season I had won X Games slopestyle, which was a big goal of mine throughout my ski career with the contest side of things. I really wanted to try and lock down X Games gold.
And how did that feel? Was it as rewarding as you thought it would be to win one at the X Games?
Yeah, for sure. It was super cool feeling. But over time, it wasn't like I showed up my first X Games and won. So throughout my career as a contest rider, it taught me a lot about life in general, just growing up, like doing all these contests. And I remember in, what was it, 2007 was my last year of high school, and I got silver at X Games. And then the next year, I started really focusing more and put a lot of energy into just preparing and getting ready and going back to X Games with the idea, like, I'm showing up, like, I want to win this contest. That's my goal. Like, pretty much my only goal, just wanted to win. And I showed up, I was skiing really well and felt like I had the skills to do it. But the day of the qualification day for slopestyle, I ended up having some bad luck in my qualifying round. And on my last jump, I went too big and ended up like landing back seat, and I didn't advance the final. I got 17th place.
Okay.
Round, and 16 was the cutoff. And at that time, I was just devastated. You know, I remember just like feeling like this is the worst day of my life. Like literally looking down at the snow and just like beating the ground. Like, man, like you just blew it, being so bummed. And that experience like just after it all passed and continued skiing that season, I realized how lucky I was to, if that was as bummed as I had really been at that point,
right,
be going for X Games and not making it into the final round, how lucky of a life I have, and how really like one contest doesn't mean really anything. Like at this point, the one contest result wasn't really what I needed. I didn't need to have it. So I went more from like just mindset of like, I gotta win the X Games to just like, I want to do that.
Okay.
And so from there, I just like, I didn't put nearly as much pressure the following seasons on myself, and went back and got another silver, a couple bronze. And every time I'd get a medal, those were all special feelings. And I'd learn something about myself and just life. And so then when I finally did win in 2011, it was definitely a really cool feeling, but wasn't like didn't change my life necessarily. Like my life was already on this pretty crazy path, and I had a lot of good things going for me at that point. It was just really rewarding for myself to stay committed to something.
Yeah, and finally check that box, because you've been doing it for a long time and you finally got that top position.
Yeah, for sure. So after I won the X, I was feeling really, really good about things in the on the competition side. And over the years, I'd gotten into snowmobiling and really started exploring, you know, outside of contests, putting a lot of time into just getting out in the mountains and skiing. So that was, every year I do that, the more I wanted to just be out snowmobiling or try and get in the heli and just look for different zones out in the backcountry to ski, because it's having a lot of fun exploring, and the feelings you get shredding power lines are definitely hard to compare to anything else in life. So as I was getting older, I was definitely looking more and more towards getting out in the backcountry and just exploring like that. So after I won, I had the Olympics then came into the picture, and a lot of people were like, oh, this is like perfect timing for you, just won X Games, like now the Olympics is coming. And I think a lot of people expected me to have more intentions with the Olympics, but I wasn't super excited about it really. Growing up, I never really watched the Olympics too much. I was always about like action sports and watching the X Games. So it wasn't as appealing to me as X Games were.
Yep.
So yeah, I that same year I got approached by Apo Skis, which was actually a French snowboard brand. And they kind of had, when they approached me, they had recently revamped their whole program, and they were trying to include skiing.
Okay.
Yeah, so they approached me, and at first I wasn't too into it. I ended up just, they called and I told them I wasn't interested, and just kept going, you know, moving on with life. And a few months later, my agent at the time contacted me and said he had just talked to another person at the brand, and it seemed like a pretty cool opportunity. They were really serious about what they wanted to do with skiing and boarding the next few years, and he thought it could potentially be a good opportunity for me, and he recommended that I meet with the guy.
Okay.
I was in Hood River at the time, and he was calling from LA. He had just met with the guy over in LA, so I told him, like, okay, sounds good. I can meet up with this guy for breakfast. So he ended up coming. The next morning, he flew out to Hood River, and we met in town and just had some breakfast, and we ended up rapping, and I basically just told him kind of my dream of the next 5 years of what I would like to do with my skiing and where I want to take things. And after I was done with telling him that, we had connected. I could tell he really liked what I had to say, and he was all about just different video stuff I wanted to do, and he was really into it. So he said he was going to go back and kind of see, you know, what he was going to do. And a couple weeks later, he put together a proposal for me that was really kind of too good to be true at the time. It's kind of what I thought, like, this is too good to be true. So kind of took my time with it. I was a little reserved on the whole thing, a little nervous because Solomon had been so good to me and didn't really want to ruin a good thing. But at the same time, it just seemed like tons of opportunity. So after a lot of thought, I ended up deciding that Apo would be a really good opportunity, and ended up moving forward with them.
So was it the money at the end of the day that really turned the tides? Because when you say it sounded too good to be true, it makes me think there's a huge number there. And I'm sure that they had some great things and they followed your vision and wanted to do what you wanted to do. But was money a big factor in that?
I mean, I would be lying if I said it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with making money, man.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for everyone listening, they just wanted to say, like, for me in my skiing, like, money's never been the main influence along the way. I always try and think of things that's what's going to help my ski career. So when I was talking to them, I kind of pitched to them a just dream scenario of what I'd like to do with different video projects and how they could help me accomplish that. And when they were on board for all that, that was the main thing. Like working with Apo seemed like they could really allow me to accomplish new things and really progress my skiing. So that was kind of the main thing. But also at the end of the day, getting just having a sweet contract with some financial compensation was definitely interesting at the time.
Yeah, you know, I think and anybody listening has to understand that you're a professional skier. Your window is, what, 20, 25 years max? And maybe it's more with the Plakes of the world, but if you look at most professional skiers, I mean, most people's careers are about 8 to 10 years, but I look at you, you're a 20 to 25-year guy, I mean, just based on the talent that you bring to the table. But you have to get paid in those 20 to 25 years, and if someone's going to do everything that you want to do career-wise, they're going to fund all of your projects and fund you. It's one of those things where it's a no-brainer. It's Solomon, thank you so much for helping me grow. Thank you for making me who I am today, and now I have to go somewhere else where I can grow even more. So I don't think it's a bad thing to take the money there, because you're also taking the advantages of what they can do for your video projects.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I had several conversations with Solomon, you know, leading up to the switch, and had told them that, you know, a new opportunity had arose, and tried to see if they, you know, would be willing to match and just kind of do for me what this new company was saying they do on the video side of things and provide those opportunities. And at the end of the day, they just couldn't, they weren't prepared to do that. So I had to make the decision to move forward, but it was a clean switch.
So Sammy, how'd things end up working out with Apo in the long run?
Well, yeah, so it was good. It started off working out really good. The first couple seasons were sweet. They allowed me to have a budget to accomplish things with filming that I hadn't had before, and provided a pretty decent budget for the SCI, the Sammy Carlson Invitational, which was really sweet. And then the year of the Olympics, when I had informed them that I wasn't going to go to the Olympics, that's when things kind of started. There's definitely some curveballs thrown at me. And I guess it was just after I'd finished a season where I'd won the second real ski, and I was feeling really good. We were midway in the Sammy C project filming with TGR, and Apo was supposed to be a big sponsor of that. And when it came time for them to make their first payment on the film, which we were hoping to get because we had big plans on Mount Hood for the summer to film, working on the first segment for that project, all of a sudden the money just didn't show up. And then fast forward a couple months in the fall, my check from the previous season just didn't show up. So all of a sudden I was sitting there, and they kept telling me, we were talking, they kept telling me to wait. They were kind of having some problems with the investors, and I needed to just sit tight for a while. So I sat tight for a while, and then started getting closer to the upcoming season. And there was a couple things that happened. My brother actually had a job with them where he ended up, it looked like they were going to pull out of sales in the U.S. and things weren't looking good at all. So I kind of started getting a little antsy, and I ended up, to make a long story short, I had to end up hiring a lawyer over in Switzerland, and it turned into this pretty big thing where I flew over, and they ended up kind of, I was prepared for it to go south, just because when I signed the contract, it seemed almost too good to be true, and a couple of my buddies had just got done with the corrupt thing, like where they had big deals, and then it ended up going really south.
Yep.
Asked for them. So before I signed the contract with them, I talked to a few of those guys and basically structured the contract to where if things went like that, that I'd protect myself legally on the back end. So I ended up having to exercise those clauses in the contract where they owed me money and they weren't producing the skis that were supposed to be produced for, I was working on a new backcountry pro model ski. So instead of just sitting there hoping, okay, things are going to, it's going to work out, because they had already at this point demonstrated some actions that I didn't really have respect for. I thought they were pretty dishonest.
Okay.
After knowing that, they're just sitting there telling me to trust them after I personally knew that they had screwed a couple people over that I had a lot of respect for. So I just like decided, you know, fuck this. Like, I'm not going to keep waiting. Like, things are happening. I've been working my whole ski career to be where I'm at right now with the Sammy C project underway. And they were kind of the biggest hiccup, and everything was good besides them not paying their first payment of the movie, and that really screwed things up. So I just decided, all right, I'm not going to just sit around for these people to blow me off again and again. Like, I'm going to take action. So I got a lawyer who actually it was pretty cool. He's one of the most known arbitration lawyers in Switzerland. We just hit him up. If you search Google search Switzerland arbitration. He's the first name that pops up. We contacted him. He said that my case wasn't really worth his time, but since he thought I was a cool guy and he also was a skier, he decided to do the whole thing pro bono for me.
Nice.
It was really cool. And it was kind of fun because over the course of the couple months, feelings had gone a little sour between myself and a few people at Apple. Not everyone, just a few people.
Okay.
So it was sweet. I flew over to Switzerland and we sat down this board meeting after they had sent me a letter saying basically I was in the wrong because they knew I was about to call a default on the contract from my end. So they tried to make one on their end and I got to go with this lawyer and we just sat in the room and he basically laughed in their faces saying that, you know, if they wanted to try and argue this in the court of law, he'd love to do it. And we had planned, we agreed before it happened that we wouldn't go to court together. But to pursue this in court, it just wasn't worth it.
Okay.
But yeah, we went and met with them in Switzerland, got to call them out on all their shit. And they said, just like they had been, okay, we'll pay you, you know, like a couple weeks. Those weeks went by, nothing happened. So finally, the last straw, I came up with the idea of, okay, like, why don't you just draft up a letter of arbitration and see if they bite on it? You know, like, we'll send them. So he drafted up a super proper letter, like we were taking him to court with no intentions to take him to court, and that was kind of the final straw. That was it. Yeah, they ended up paying me the money they owed me, which was nice. I didn't really expect to get it, but I ended up getting that money. And when I went into this deal, I knew it was kind of like risky, but at the same time, nothing's guaranteed. I still can't even believe that this is my 10th year as a pro rider, and you know, I didn't think I would make it this far as a pro skier. I knew it was possible, but just a lot has to line up. And so I kind of went into it. If this works out, sweet. If not, I'm just going to call Armada and hope that I have the relationship in the ski industry where I can at least get some free skis from them and I'll just go skiing. Because that's what it's all about at the end of the day. It's just skiing still for me, you know. It still brings me a lot of joy. So all this was going down, just like, fuck it, and called Armada, just cold call. Said, hey, I've been having some problems with my sponsor. Like, I'm done and I need some skis to ski this season. And they're all about it. Like, okay, we can get you some skis. And they didn't think that it didn't seem like they were going to have the means to support me, but they were super stoked to get me or financially support me, but they were really stoked to get me on the skis and, you know, whatever I needed product wise to get me going. And that was going into the second year of the Sammy C project. So instead of just like sitting around waiting to finish the movie with a proper ski sponsor, I just said, fuck it. I'm going to finish this thing off because I put way too much time into my ski career to just stop after these guys. You know, I couldn't let them ruin the whole project after them pulling out or the sponsorship going south. So I got hooked up with some Armadas and started riding them. And then midway through the season, we were able to come to terms on an agreement, and now I'm stoked. I ride for the best ski company out.
Well, that's awesome, man. It's like you had the last laugh, and it's unfortunate that it had to come to that, but it's a learning experience, and you're going to have a lot of those in the ski industry, and you know, it seemed too good to be true. It was, but you still got paid, and you still were able to make your movies, and that's really the objective, is to keep you out there on snow, and the money's nice to have, too. In looking at what you've done over the past few years, I don't think there's been a skier that's had more personal projects out there and that have come to fruition like yours have. In the things that I've seen, the things that stick out, I mean, on top of the hood, you wanted to do a nod to Mount Hood and give a video out to all your fans. And that was pretty awesome and great to see. The triple was ridiculous and not something I need to see every day, but seeing it once looking great there was phenomenal.
Something I need to do every day either.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, that was one of those experiences as an athlete that there's not too many moments like that. Like, those are really special moments where I was just completely mind blown on what had happened. I couldn't believe that. Just the overall, the mindset and just the where my skiing was at that point, it was a really rewarding feeling because it came as a result of just tons of dedication and hard work, learning rotations and the overall just time spent on snow. It was just so rewarding to do the triple because I remember feeling when I did my first double flip was crazy.
Yeah.
I did my first double. I remember thinking like, man, this is it for me. Like, this is it. Like, I'm not going to continue to progress with the sport as more people coming in to the sport at that time were coming from a gymnastics or trampoline background, where I had zero gymnastics background or trampoline training as a kid. It was all the rotations I was learning was solely from time spent on my skis and just different tricks I had done on my skis was how I gained my air awareness from.
Yep.
Time when I did the switch triple, I was just completely mind blown. Like you see, if you watch the video, it looks almost like I'm claiming as soon as I land, but I was more like just completely mind blown. I'm like reaching up to the sky. Like there's gotta be somebody up there looking over me. Cause I can't believe that just happened.
And it might not even be a claim. It's just like, holy shit, I'm on my feet.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't believe I was on my feet. It was a crazy feeling, but it felt just kind of exactly how I had envisioned it. It was really like living a dream. So I just sat there and dreamt about it a bunch. Like originally the triple came, just we started talking about it, you know, after skiing, just sitting around, just all talking about random things. And so one of my buddies from Hood, Tommy Ellingson, a guy I credit a lot of my success to as well as early on mentor, he brought it up like, what do you think about the triple? Like he wanted to do a triple front flip. And I remember early on, I didn't think too much about it. But as I started doing more like switch double cork rotations, that was the one I always felt the most comfortable with. And the more I started playing around with different grabs and just doing it on bigger jumps, the more I thought, like, oh, maybe the triple is possible someday.
Well, another crazy feeling for you, it has to be, is dropping in that ski jump switch. That was gnarly, man. I mean, just watching that just gave me the chills. How scary was that for you?
That whole session was definitely really intense. By far the most intense session I've ever had on my skis. The switch drop was definitely intense. What made it intense was the, if you look closely when you watch the shot, you can see there's a bunch of 2x2s that started melting through.
Okay.
The ramp hadn't been sessioned in like 20 years before we showed up. So there's all these old screws and nails sticking out of those 2x2s. The last couple times I hit it forwards, I started noticing them grabbing my skis. So that was what made that super scary, is the nails poking through. I was really nervous that I would catch an edge on the nails or something. That whole thing was just so much work to bring together. We put about 2 weeks in before I actually got to session it to make the jump even work. But the people, all the local people helping out on that project had put so much time and energy into it that they had to every time. There's two different times they had to manually fill the ramp with snow. They had this sketchy setup. It was pretty crazy. They had a tractor with a big cable off of it that stretched probably about 500 yards around a tree, then wrapped around that tree back to the very top of the ramp, and then wrapped back down the length of the entire drop in and connected to a little sled that they had made.
Okay.
We would manually fill these garbage cans. I think we had 6 garbage cans that we were working with. We had fill 6 garbage cans with snow, and then they would back the tractor up and slowly move the sled up the ramp, and one trash can at a time, dump the snow out, and then hand pack it on that thing.
I don't think a lot of people know the work that goes into the features that you build, whether it's the jump that you're fixing there or anything out in the backcountry. In that case, it was 2 weeks, but in other cases, it's 3 to 4 days of shoveling and shaping a feature before you can even hit it. So there's a ton of work that goes into all these things that the casual fan really doesn't need to know about, because all they want is the ski porn out of it all anyway.
For sure. And that's part of now a lot of the fun, just the setup and what keeps it entertaining along the way, just all the setups and those times leading up to the sessions are pretty cool. But yeah, as the session was going down, I did a couple 360s and a couple cork sevens. And my goal with that, the Nordic jump, I wanted to hit it switch. That was the whole idea going into it.
Yep.
So I was getting to be about maybe 11:30 noon that day, and I was kind of losing energy a little bit. And we talked about the possibility of coming back the next day and trying to hit it switch that next day. And the head builder just kind of vetoed that plan, said there's no way that we can fill the jump with snow again. So whatever I wanted to do, I had to accomplish it that day. So I just kind of sacked up and went for it.
Yeah, that was an awesome clip to watch. And I'll put that on the website as well, so everybody will be able to see it. But, you know, I think getting towards the end of our interview, there's one thing that when I think about you, Sammy, I think about your skiing, and you're arguably one of the best skiers to ever ski. You're one of those skiers that could go out and film with the step crew. You proved that you could do that back in your early poor boys days. Then there was a lot of park skiing and you slayed the park. You destroyed everything. Then you decided to take your tricks to the backcountry. Then you started skiing big Alaska lines. You've done everything and you've done it at the top of the industry. But when you talk to the ski media or you talk to other skiers, you don't fit in that conversation for some reason. And I don't know why that is. So I started doing some digging just to see why Sammy isn't looked at as, when you think of Seth Morrison, Shane McConkie, why you aren't in that conversation. And I say that you should be there just based on your skiing ability and what you've been able to do at every level. But what people had to say to me was that you took control of the shoots and you knew everything from your experience. You know where the cameraman needs to be. You know what the jump needs to look like. You know how cuts are going to work. So you know every single thing within what it takes to make a shoot successful. But then some people said that the fun could have been sucked out of it as well because it got a little too serious out there, and wanted to think what you thought about that.
Yeah, well thanks for that. Nice of you to say, but I don't know, man. I think I have such, over the last few years, I think that I just been so focused on what I'd like to accomplish that could, some people aren't really ready to put in the amount of work I want to put in on the back end to get these shots. So sometimes it can be conflicting. I don't know. For me, I'm having so much fun riding, and definitely over the years there, I've learned what it does take for sure to make things happen. I try not to get too involved with cameramen and photographers, let them do their thing these days. But I don't know. I think just when I'm working on, like for the Sammy C project, I just had a level of work that I wanted to put in. And some of the people I was working with, they didn't want to put in the same amount of energy and time. So it was conflicting, but I wouldn't say that. I think a lot of the shoots that I'm involved in, a lot of people are having a lot of fun. Just certain scenarios, it's time to be serious and focus and work hard, and that's not why everyone's into it. But I try and work with the people that do want to put in that time and show the same commitment, and then there's not a problem. But just if I work with certain people that aren't ready to put forth the same amount of energy, it can definitely be conflicting. It's not like I'm trying to go out and just do the same thing that's been done in the past. I think if you really want to try and progress and keep moving forward, you have to put forth a certain level of commitment, and not everybody is trying to do that.
I will let you know that everyone said off the hill, Sammy's amazing. He's so fun. I mean, if there's a complaint about Sammy Carlson, it's that he has too much energy and he wants to do too much. It's like he can't sit around. They're just saying that, you know, from what I found, and I found it across the board, that it was just, you have a vision, you know what you want, and you are not going to stop until you get what you want. And I mean, there's something to be respected for that, but you know, you have to deal with other people's feelings as well.
Yeah, sure. And I always try and tend to everyone's feelings out there. And it can be struggling at times for sure but I mean, I hold myself the same. Like I expect myself to be just as committed as I hold, you know, like I hold everyone else. Like if I'm trying to get a trick, like I'm going to go 100% till I nail it exactly how I want to do it. And I for sure have a vision of how I want to try and make my skiing look. So it can be challenging sometimes working with certain people that have a different vision. But over the years, I've kind of figured out how to work with people that have the same expectations for their work. So not that those problems don't exist.
Is that why you do a lot of your own projects? Because you can get the people that you want to work on them, and you guys have the same work ethic and you can make that happen in that respect?
Yeah, 100%. Definitely. Try and do my own thing to work with people that I like working with, and just it helps keep it fun for me. But in the past, if I'm involved in another project that they have different kind of goals, it can, but mainly I guess I work by myself just to keep the level, like the overall amount of time on my skis a little higher, because when you're working with big production crews, you find yourself skiing like one or two runs a day, and I just don't really have the patience for that. I like to try and get as much riding in myself as I can.
Yeah, hurry up and wait is no fun.
Yeah, exactly. So that's more what inspired me to kind of take things into my own control and organize my own projects so I could get more riding time out there.
Yeah, well, Sammy, your projects are phenomenal, and really everything that you've done in your ski career has been phenomenal, which is great. I think I remember meeting you the first time. I think you were 15 years old. a lot has changed since you were 15 years old, but the skiing has remained the same. It keeps getting better every year, and it's always a treat to see. And I thank you for coming on the program, and we'll have some more time with the inappropriate questions. But thank you very much, Sammy. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
All right, see you, man.
All right.
So interesting perspective from Sammy Carlson, and we have more Sammy on the PowelMovement.com. He's answering inappropriate questions from Kent Kreitler, and he will put questions together for Glenn Plake, who's next week's guest. What we didn't find out really from Sammy was why he is not in the conversation of the greatest skiers ever. Based on his skiing alone, he could definitely be there, but based on conversations I've had with others, his name does not come up. Is Sammy hard to work with? Is he too demanding on location? All questions I couldn't really get the answer to, and you can formulate your own opinion based on Sammy's answers. Thanks again for tuning in to Sponsored, brought to you by Powdered Magazine. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and you can reach out to me at PowellMovement1 on Twitter or mike@thepowellmovement.com. Send me questions for future guests or any show feedback. It would be greatly appreciated. The snow has started to fall. Everybody enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll talk to you next Wednesday.